Well, we're here in Asheville today and tomorrow, and that is the city where Keenan Lake grew up. He left for a time to play professional basketball abroad. His father was a Globetrotter, too. No, I mean an actual Harlem Globetrotter. Keenan says he owes a lot to his dad. He thought about him often when he worked as a social worker in Asheville. In fact, he thinks a lot about fatherhood in general. Keenan founded a nonprofit called My Daddy Taught Me That. It's a grassroots organization aimed at helping boys mature into manhood. And Keenan Lake joins us now on The State of Things. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about your organization.
So the organization, again, is a tome, kind of a piggyback off the book that I wrote, which is also entitled My Daddy Taught Me That. The program is, again, to be a mentor for young men ages 12 through 19, but take it to the next level. So, getting very in-depth with these young men, being in their lives, a lot of mentoring, but teaching our young men to be accountable for their actions. Being accountable for their actions, being able to accept responsibility for the things that they're doing, and also just showing our young men that and informing them that there are pitfalls and roadblocks that they're going to face, particularly, being young, maybe even so being a minority in this country, but not to sit back and say, have a pity party or, kumbaya, but not only show them, but let them see how to avoid those pitfalls, how to be better for that.
Well, that can be valuable information for anybody, anytime. But you did grow up in Asheville in the 80s, and I do wonder what that's like for an African-American family growing up in a city with not a large African-American population.
So, you're right. Born and raised here. I'm a native of Asheville, North Carolina. And, to be quite honest, Asheville has changed a lot. You said not a lot of African-American. I think Americans here, we make up 5.7% of the population, 3.2% of the population living on or below the poverty line. So, it's almost a little bit more than one out of every two African-Americans living in this city that are living in poverty. The change for me has been more than not seeing how economically our community and city has changed. And so with that being said, Asheville has grown to be, a place and a hub to where it's one of the sought off places to live and visit in the entire country. In fact, Forbes put out a Forbes list in January of 2018. We're the only U.S. city on the top 15 places in the world to visit. So
in the four, wow.
Yeah. So,
so Asheville is the only American city, the only city in the United States on the Forbes top 15 places in the world
to visit.
Okay. So there you go.
Economically, we have the highest cost of living and the lowest paying jobs. The housing economy is, if you're in that market, then you're great because it's booming. Right. But if you're looking for a home and you're making an average living, then, you pretty much cannot afford to live in Asheville, North Carolina.
Well, and I've seen statistics that show that African-American families in particular have not kept pace with that growth and that development. So let's get back to that because, you talked about growing up here. Talk a little bit more about your father because he came back here to
– Yeah. So my dad's also a native. Again, you mentioned earlier a Harlem Globetrotter. He played with Curly Neal, Metalark, the original Globetrotters. He spent a lot of time in New York, but he came back home and worked for 30 years at the Juvenile Evaluation Center. So he worked for the state, a pillar in the community, activists doing work in the community. But he passed away in 2010. For him to even see the change, from 2010 to now would be, I think he would be like, this is not the same place that I grew up in. Asheville, again, very community net oriented, growing up. And again, it's almost like Asheville's changing or trying to change it to not only a metropolitan city, but again, keep up with being the diverse, initiatives and innovative and stuff like that. And that's the pitch, So when you look at commercials and you see, Asheville's this great diverse place to visit, the mountains are so beautiful, this, that, and the third, but in actuality, there's not a lot of diversity here.
So when did it occur to you to come back? Because we talked about you playing basketball internationally, then came back to Asheville. Your father had worked, was doing, and your mother too, really, doing social work in this area. And then you started doing social work.
Yeah, it wasn't by choice. I got my degree in sports medicine. And again, after playing basketball, It was by chance, and I think God had something to do with that. I actually, seeing both parents being social workers, I had no aspiration. I was on my way to Australia, going to play ball, and I needed a job in the meantime. And so a couple of strings were pulled, and I got a job working for Buncombe County Health and Human Services, formerly DSS, Department of Social Services. For the last 16 years, I've been a social worker myself. Being a social worker was not my intent, but I think the work that I've done and my life's work has been engineered and geared around that.
And that's where you notice that it was really about boys becoming men and fatherhood, particularly given the bulk of the cases that you were dealing with, struck you as there was a deep need there.
Well, exactly. And not only that, it looks like I said earlier, just God had a vision on my life. So I noticed in 2002, 2003, from being a social worker, primarily Child Protective Services, CPS, dealing with neglected and abused kids, that a lot of youth, a lot of homes that I was visiting had no male presence, no fathers, I started doing a lot of research, and the research would have you to believe that this is a minority thing or African-American thing. It's a human thing. And so that's when I really started paying attention to, I had a great dad. My dad was my best friend. He was my father, and I loved him dearly. So it was like, okay, why is it that not every kid has the same opportunities that I had? And so with that being said, I started again doing research, and what I started noticing, this was actually an old statistic. It was a 2012. It's gotten worse now, but 13.7 million single family homes in America, 84% are headed by single moms. So what that tells us, if we have 10 kids living in a single-parent home, 8.5 of those youth are being raised by a single mom with no positive male influences or role models. And it bothered me. I started seeing how this affected not only our families and our youth primarily, but it affected the mothers and the women as well. So, how can we as men, who, if you follow anything, the Bible or Christ, being head of our households and being the leaders in our communities, if we're not accepting our responsibilities and stepping up to the table, taking care of what we're supposed to be doing, then how are our children and our families going to, follow suit as well?
So tell us what the message is, because again, there's at least a challenge here. On the one hand, you talk about the responsibility that anyone would have to be a responsible partner in a relationship, to not only be a partner with whoever it is they choose to live with, but also anyone they bring into the world. And that's what I hear you saying. And on the other hand, there are these other obstacles that not every family faces that are particular to minorities, and we're now talking about African Americans in particular. So what's the message to these kids? Because it is also true that they face challenges that, frankly, they shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
Right?
So the message is that, again, being those leaders in your community, but then knowing, so one of the biggest things that I talk about in my program is exposure. And that's on all levels, exposure to education, exposure to outside of their, their normality of their responsibilities or the way that they were living or raised, but being exposed to so many different things. And you're exactly right. It's letting them know, providing the information that, being young men in this country, particularly men of color, your opportunities are not equal. So with that being said, we're not going to, again, cry about it. We know this. This is nothing new. This is something that's been happening for, since the beginning. How are we going to succeed? How are we not going to fall victim to the trap? So education is key. But not only just following education from the standpoint of going to school, because we also know that our school systems are failing. But being able to educate yourself, being able to be aware of, what's happening in your city, your state, your country, internationally, but being able to give these kids the tools to be able to stand up for themselves, to know how to navigate the system at hand, because, again, the pipeline of prison is real. Mm-hmm. And we know that it's getting our kids at a high rate. And, again, I mentioned earlier the trap. If our kids are not following suit and educating themselves and getting out of those environments, they will fall victim to the trap, which is keeping them in prison.
So how do you see – for instance, we just talked about what's going on with the police department now. There's a robust conversation happening, at least in this moment, about policing in this city. Do you engage your kids in that to say, look, this is what's happening, and somehow we need to make ourselves involved one way or another?
So Sheriff Duncan is a huge supporter of our program, and we've actually done programming around law enforcement being, you know, attached to our youth and kids. I think that has not happened enough. I think when you have incidents that took place, like what took place in Nashville a few months ago, happen, you know, it's more intentional. However, with that being said, I think that, you know, our law enforcement are dealing with their own issues, you know, dealing with, you know, training, you know, being able to have the proper training. And also, you know, being able to have the proper officers police. So you can't have people who don't look like you and who don't understand you policing a community that they have no value in or that they don't see value in the people who live there. So I think with that being said, you know, I think that they have their own issues that they need to deal with. But I think also having our youth informed about the proper channels to go through when, you know, things arise or happen.
What about other things, other exposures, ways in which you might expose kids to things they might not have others see? What are some other examples?
So just real briefly, you know, our program has a four curriculum tier that I developed. The first part is what we call men discussion groups. So we have every Monday and Wednesday we meet. We talk about everything from the privatization of prisons to third grade reading test scores to how to tie a tie. We have guest speakers from the U.S. District Attorney to a man who spent 17 years in prison for murder to women to teach our young men and talk to our young men about what women look for in men and be respectful towards women. There's a STD, STI prevention program that I teach and, you know, a lot of trainings, a lot of programming. But outside of that, the other component is what we call life-changing events. So really being able to get these kids off this mountain, expose them to different things other than what they see their normal day-to-day. Airplane riding, camping, hiking. We go to Carolina Panther football games. In February, we took 25 of our youth to New Orleans to the museums. We went to the Whitley Plantation. Mm-hmm. We do college campus tours throughout the state of North Carolina to allow our high school kids to experience that. Anything that's going to expose them to different things off this mountain and show them real diversity. There's a huge component, our next component, which is our third one, which is our education. So making sure we're tracking grades, getting tutors for our youth who need them, really being intentional about education. And finally, one of our biggest programs is our job training, being able to, you know, access jobs for all of our kids who are old enough, but then being able to not only teach the workforce, being able to apply for jobs, how to present yourself in an application, how to fill out an application, and then money management. So...
Wow, that's a big portfolio. But what's next? What's next for my daddy taught me that?
Well, you know, the dream is to get it statewide and then possibly nationwide. You know, we're looking to first get it, you know, to where we needed to be here in his hometown, build the infrastructure. You know, being a grassroots organization. You know, and honestly, this was just me wanting to help. You know, me wanting to give back to the community that I was raised in and that I knew the way that I knew how. So I know how to work with youth and kids. That's been my dream and passion, young adults to say that. But what ended up happening was it was so successful to the point where it got bigger and bigger. So now it's turning into a movement to where, you know, hopefully, again, this thing can be something statewide and then nationwide.
Keenan, great pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Keenan Lake is the founder and director of My Daddy Taught Me That, a nonprofit geared at preparing underprivileged boys for manhood. And he is, you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Keenan is the subject of a documentary, Beneath the Veneer. It is screening at UNC Asheville on May 4th. The screening is followed by a conversation with Keenan and the filmmakers. And again, all that information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we look at how Airbnb is affecting the city of Asheville. Do stay tuned.